You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, but we should be. Why are we so concerned, especially today? I don't know. Same old stuff. Same old, same old, same old, same old, same old. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I'll tell you, there's trends. And the trend has always been towards more control. There's, you know, I remember, I'll give you an example. I remember in the mid-90s, the Arizona Breakfast Club, if you didn't go to the Arizona Breakfast Club, you didn't know what was going on. Because this is before the internet and web pages and broadband and videos and all that stuff that we take advantage of now, certainly the young people. And the Breakfast Club was generally senior citizens. They were older people that had combined to, you know, fight communism. I'll give you the history. Harry Everingham was a patriot back in the day. During World War II, he would go around to large factories and do his best to, you know, they captured Nazi propaganda films on U-boats, you know, this kind of stuff. You know, it's all this Nazi propaganda to the troops that they had in support of why they're doing whatever the heck it was they were doing. Well, they'd go around to General Motors and Boeing and aircraft manufacturing, making tanks and Chrysler and all this stuff, and go, we, you know, in this, the war effort, and you're and Rosie the Riveter is going to go kick butt. During World War II, that's what they did, you know, against the Germans. Well, of course, they had problems with, you know, communism, too. They knew, you know, our allies, the Russians, we'll go say bad things about them later. So as they go around, that was what Harry Everingham did. His thing was to whoop up the troops back home here in the factories and so on into more production. The war effort, save a soldier's life, get him, you know, his bullets. So that was where he got his notoriety, was during World War II in support of the war effort. It was We the People. That was the original way back in, United We Stand, and all these groups were things that he had started. Now, of course, they either evolved or went away, and then new groups, and they call them the same thing. But this is back in the originals. So in the 40s and 50s, it goes, by the time you get to the 50s, then it becomes an anti-communist thing. And it was always a Republican thing. But during that time, in the early 50s, this is when the United Nations had just got a good foothold. And I was doing some research, and I came across this stuff because I remember in the early 90s when Harry Everingham, he died a few years ago at 94, and I inherited the Breakfast Club from him. And it's just, where else is it going to go but a libertarian? I mean, if you're advocating for freedom, you know, there's some Republican you want to put in charge of it. Come on. So I got to know Harry. I was a speaker for a long time, attended and so on. It just eventually evolved, you know, to me. But and the first thing I did was dismantle it. No more board of directors, no more, you know, decentralized. Just went totally this freedom thing. When we come back, I want to tell you the history of the Arizona Breakfast Club. It's like 40 years now. And there was a reason for its longevity. There was a reason for its respect. There's a reason. And I'm going to share it with you because we're going to need things like this in the future because here it comes. We'll be right back.
You're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're doing all kinds of goodies here, trying to get the set done. Now, I'm always distracted. I apologize. Well, you know, I wanted to get right back into it. Yeah, I'll tell you what's going on so you guys caught us. We're redoing the video set so that we can start doing a lot more video. We may even be doing some of the radio from the video. So we're working on the background here that trying to, you know, make it all purdy and everything. We're doing reconstruction and such and teleprompters and all that because we're going into this battle. And I know where we're at. You know, we're going to have to go up against the big boys. So we're really starting to upgrade on our video studio so that we can go slapping around CNN and Fox and MSNBC. You know why? Because we can! So the one thing that we have is a lot of talent. And I gave a speech this weekend at the Liberty Forum. And the one thing that we made very clear is that I could see what was coming, certainly after 9/11, you know, and it's all this fear, and you have swooping in F-15s, bombing explosions and so, as they go into the shows, and you get 30 seconds of, oh, my God, man, it's like sensory overload. You're going, wow, what? And then it's a breaking alert, new alert, and it's always every half hour it's something, and I'm just, wow. And what do we have to compete? You have an activist getting beat over the head by some officer. Yes, I just have Jean, one of our activists. She comes in this morning. She goes, you know what, Ernie? She goes, let me tell you what's going on. She goes, last night, we're up till 2 in the morning. Her husband works swing shift at the airport. And he's a mechanic. And he comes home. They're hanging a little bit, and they live at a dead end cul-de-sac, a dead end up against the mountains, no less. I mean, there is the only people that go on their street is them and about five neighbors. Nothing else. $57 ticket for having their tires too much up on the curb by like 10 inches. $57 ticket. Thank you for playing. Why? Because government's broke. Because they can. I guarantee you they send these guys out and they go, the king's men, go make me some money. There is, if we were to go and track what the money coming in from all of the revenue for traffic tickets and civil violations and everything. If you go look, I'll bet you there's a lot of numbers out there. I don't know how much revenue they're getting, but keep in mind, once they create a government number, then they have a bond, and each one has a different level of value. So that $57 ticket right now is worth what? I mean, they could go out and sell that bond or sell, you know, the value of that like a commodity. I mean, is it worth $10? 15, 20, and it's not worth, you know, the full face, but they look at percentage of collection on how much and cost and courts and yada, 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 and they go out and they trade this stuff. They're creating government numbers, just like subprime market. They are creating a number that then they can then trade as a commodity. They're just going to keep writing tickets. Government is just a gang with a flag. We've known this for a long time. The Arizona Breakfast Club made this clear, and I remember, it must have been early, mid-90s, 93, 4, around in there. I started speaking to them. We were doing a lot of activism and so on. They had me come speak, and I realized what they were. They were older, retired freedom fighters that have come to Arizona, and they just, you know, hang out with each other, and they keep learning. You know, it's like, you know, eat, meet, and retreat, which is fine. You know, and their responsibility is to go save me. Their responsibility is to, you know, take care of business. So, for themselves, just learn what's what, and then they'll make whatever decision. Because everybody wants to have, look, you have they'd have up to 300 people sometimes. You know, look at all these hundreds of people you got here. Let's go whip butt. Together we can what? You know, another collective? How about just individuals, you know, just have it together. So this is what's happened. What I'm going to do is I want to tell you a little bit of history. The history of the Breakfast Club has been from the late 60s. Harry Everingham came to Arizona and retired. And he took all the organization that he had built over the previous 20 years or so in awakening people to the communist threat. You know, that's the fascist threat, then the communist threat, then it's a not America threat. Well, there's kind of a slant to it. He was always providing the view of the government. Now, you think he's being a patriot? I mean, you know, Ike is, you know, we got Dwight Eisenhower was president, Republican, late 50s. Woohoo, man, we're, you know, powerful. JFK comes in and he gets assassinated. And then you had the Vietnam War and all that. Oh, we blame the Democrats. Then, you know, so this Republican thing, doing really, then comes Nixon. Oh, my goodness. Oh, the Reagan bailed them out. So you can, it just goes back and forth, and it started just pulling. It's like taking a paper clip and just keep bending it until it breaks. Well, they kept bending these people back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for decades. They come to Arizona, and the Breakfast Club met every Saturday. Every Saturday from, see, it was like September to May. They took the summer off because keep in mind, this is a winter visitor thing. So it's into September, something they start getting going, and then they go through May, starts getting hot, and all the snowbirds, we call them, they take their RVs or whatever, and they travel places north again. Then when they come back, they'd congregate, and every Saturday they'd meet, and you'd have a lot of great people. A lot of them were World War II veterans. You know, they were commander this and colonel that and ex-bomber pilot and go around. They wear their flight jackets and hats and they were on some ship in Vietnam and, you know, it's just Korea. It was amazing history. And while my kids were young, I would take the opportunity and let them yak. I just get them started. You know, tell my son about when you were the Flying Tigers in China. Tell my kids about and get this history, this verbal history. What I saw is as I'm coming of age, I'm in my late 20s, early 30s during this time, and I start seeing their perspective and what was happening then and how inconsistent they were with the position that they were taking in support of their government and what the government was doing and what the Republicans were doing. And what, I'll give you an example. Bob Dole was the Antichrist. Man, Bob Dole, Antichrist. He helped bring in the Brady Bill. He did this. He did. He's evil right up until he got the Republican nomination in 96. All of a sudden, he wasn't that bad anymore. You guys even remember that Bob Dole ran for president? You know, he was the Republican nominee in 96 against Clinton. Heck, I hardly even remember it. It was just his turn. They didn't care. It was a throwaway. So I'm like, you guys are killing me, man. You know, where's the consistency? Well, it was a mentality that I see still, it's starting to crack just now. In just the last, I guess, you know, years. Well, since, you know, the Ron Paul thing. That really, you know, put a big giant whoa on it. Because I got an email this morning from Bumper Hornberger. His name's Jacob Hornberger from Future Freedom Foundation. He's our first keynote speaker in 2001 for our Freedom Summit, which was immediately after the World Trade Center got hit. We're three weeks after that, we had our first Freedom Summit. And we're just like, yep, here it comes. He gave a speech right after mine on Sunday at the Liberty Forum, and guys came up to him and they said, yeah, if you would have said this stuff, you know, about foreign policy and American, you know, ugly American kind of stuff, if you'd said this 5 years ago, I would have walked out or punched you. But now it's like, yeah, I can see what you're talking about. Well, this is the same stuff, you know, he's been saying since early 90s when he started the Freedom Daily. It's like a booklet that's sent out every month called Freedom Daily, and you go through, and it's like, you know, each day of the week or the month, you kind of, you know, you're looking through this stuff. And it's really good articles and stuff. A lot of people that, you know, names you may know would write for this in the freedom community. And now, all of a sudden, he's a prophet. Well, the Breakfast Club, this generation that now, you know, they're in their easily, you know, 80s and 90s. You know, but there's a, you know, still the baby boomers are now starting to retire and so on. They were kind of a part of this crowd too. But these guys had, you know, they remember when America was much freer than it is now. I mean, after, even after FDR, when they started all this great society stuff, they could see there was problems. Yeah, this communist kind of, we don't like it. We read H.L. Mencken saying, you know, freedom, good government sucks and all this. And now they get to the point to where everything that they were rallying against was being supported by the Republicans anyway. Where do you go? What do they do? And in Harry, he didn't have a lot of time for the libertarian thing. And there was a reason, and I didn't know until I started doing some research and found out why. Now, when we come back, I'll share that with you, why and what's changed.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah. Let's take a look. This is, I want to share this with you. There's a lot of stuff going on right now, and I need to give some of the older members of the audience perspective. This last weekend, we had Bumper Hornberger, Future Freedom Foundation, that represents a lot of Christian libertarians that are, you know, in this fight for the long haul for a lot of reasons. And then there's Judge Napolitano spoke, and his message was, hey, you know, the history you've been getting ain't so. So he was really hammering on Lincoln. And you could tell a lot of the older people were like, what? Well, the younger people, they know exactly what he's talking about. Because they've read and done research on so much more stuff than they've ever known. They just, yeah, you know, Washington can't tell a lie, chop down cherry trees and stuff. I mean, this is just government propaganda. I mean, all this stuff is just, seriously? I mean, so there is so much stuff that is not known. And if you were not going to groups like the Arizona Breakfast Club, you didn't even have an inkling that this stuff was going on. If you looked in 1988 when Ron Paul ran for president as a libertarian, there was he was getting all on it. He's talking about the Council on Foreign Relations. He's talking about Bilderberger. He's talking about Trilateral Commission. He's talking about, I mean, this is Ron Paul, 88, running for president. So you can understand now that, you know, he spends a lot of time on Alex Jones and so on going, yeah, let's go get the bad boys. He knows, but he knows when and when not to say stuff. And he's just more experienced. But don't even think that he doesn't know. He knows what he's up against. As a young man in late 20s, early 30s, and I'm going to the Breakfast Club, and you're not, and there's no internet. You know, you're not getting it on the lamestream media outlets, the media that's so last century. You know, the most they have was fax trees. And you get booklets and newspapers. And the old thing, they called it the Phoenix or something like that. It was like John Birch Society stuff. You know, John Birch, you know, God bless him. Because, I mean, they nailed a bunch of stuff. Of course, they're conspiracists. You know, these guys, they're evil. They're telling the truth. Damn it. So I went through this awakening, you know, a lot of the stuff, just, you know, getting a beat on it. It didn't change what I was doing. I'm like, yeah, you know, they're lying. I'm showing they're lying because they're liars. And but this is what happened. In the late 50s, there was a thing. It was called the Freedom College in Colorado. And it was done by, oh, I don't want to say Leonard Reed, if that's not right. I think it was probably Leonard Reed. But there was an effort in the 50s by the United Nations when they came in to take over organizations like the Girl Scouts. The Girl Scouts, in their manual, they were talking about UNICEF, which is this, you know, you remember you're going around trick-or-treating and collecting money for the United Nations for the children, right? They'd send all this money to the United Nations. I mean, right off the bat, you're going, what the heck is that? Well, the Girl Scouts, they had in there a bunch of stuff referencing the United Nations. And I think the Boy Scouts did it one time too. But this is a big thing where you had the libertarians of the day and the Republicans of the conservatives in a cross effort. That's when they started to mesh. You started to see people on both sides of this freedom fight. You know, the hardcore Randian, kind of, Ayn Rand had already written like The Fountainhead and We the Living and Anthem and a lot of these, you know, individual self-interest kind of mentality that was going through the 40s and 50s. And then it was in the 50s she wrote Atlas Shrugged. Well, even before that, what happened was there was this ideology of what the purpose of government was, is not to go give everything to everybody by taking from someone. It was really this defense of individual rights thing. It was really starting to mature. The conservatives got really involved with the libertarian types in this United Nations brainwashing of the next generation. They could see what was happening. It's Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts in their manual starting to indoctrinate them into this world government thing. So that's where there was some overlap. I'm doing some research and I'm finding some names that I know on the libertarian side with the real hardcore anti-communist conservatives on the other side, of which Harry Everingham was one that started the Breakfast Club in the late 60s. After this, it's, you know, 15, 20 years later, he retires to Arizona. They open up a little office, and they start doing the Arizona Breakfast Club every Saturday. Lots of people went to this. In fact, it was broadcast on local television every Saturday morning on Channel 5, KPHO, Wallace and Ladmo. They were a popular children's program here for decades as that station. They were independent. Now I think they're CBS or something, but they ran that. They would have simulcast on radio shows. In fact, I would simulcast them on the network that I was on, the radio station here locally that I was on for a little bit of time. Well, this was a very powerful time for communication with them because there was no alternative. You didn't watch the Saturday Morning Breakfast Club. You didn't know a lot of this stuff was going on. How else did you get it? Didn't come from the networks. But there was a schism. There was in the late 50s, there was controversy. They were like, "Nah, no, you dang libertarians. You know what? You know, you don't get it. We got to." And they're like, "No, we don't. Yeah, we do." Late 50s, this is where the separation started between the libertarian-oriented people and the Republican-oriented people. But now it's coming back. And I'll tell you what that schism was when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Wish now voices can be heard. Just want to scream louder and louder and louder.
What the hell are we fighting for?
Yeah, what are we fighting for here in Declare Your Independence with me? Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, and beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And they're getting more and more beautiful as we speak. Yeah, during the breaks, they do the power tools. But, yeah, we need to get everything all set. We're going into another wave of butt whipping here. And it's, we go to Searchlight this weekend. I'll be in Pennsylvania and Tennessee. And a lot of the activists are hooking up with the activists out of Las Vegas and Laughlin, and they're going to make their presence known at Searchlight. So they're going to try and make sure our presence isn't known. And they'll be ouch, quit it, and you can't, and we're going to, and roving security and New World Order kind of whatever, as they can. We know this. We've been up against, so you use commando tactics, and you spread the message anyways. Well, this has been going on for a long time. In the late 50s, there was a college called the Freedom College. And I'll tell you basically how, you know, names and stuff, doesn't really, dates and everything doesn't really matter, but this is what you can remember. There was an effort to try and change the culture here in America that you take leaders in academia and business and just teach them history, you know, the proper role of government, et cetera. They created the Freedom College in Colorado, where CEOs would send their management to, We have large companies. I mean, you know, big companies that you would know that they would send a 100, you know, 50 at a time, 100, 200 over a summer. They go there and they just learn history, proper little government, freedom, economics, a lot of the things that we do, a lot of the kinds of speakers that we have at like Freedom Summits and so on and Liberty Forum. So they go and get this. Now, they still have a lot of these different things around the country. In fact, the Freedom Library that you see advertised on Freedom's Phoenix is done by Howard Blitz. He's a State Farm branch owner in Yuma, Arizona. He has a freestanding building there, and his business is on the first floor. On the second floor is called the Freedom Library, and he has classes for young kids that he goes and does a lot of. If they go through his class, then he has scholarships that sends them to these different camps around the country for them to learn more advanced studies in Constitution and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So this kind of thing's been going on for a long time. What happened was the schism was between the Republican, conservative, anti-communist types, you know, the McCarthy era, kind of, you know, get the, you know, I'd rather be dead than red, you know, that kind of stuff. You have Harry Everingham versus the libertarians of the day. Now, I'm not even sure even before they became objectivists, before they used the word libertarian a long time ago, probably a decade or and a half, probably a long time before the actual Libertarian Party started. And the difference between the two was I understood the beginnings of it, and it wasn't until later, just a few years ago, before Harry died, that I asked him about this. In the early 90s, before I had spoken at Arizona Breakfast Club, before I ever heard the word libertarian. As I became more aware of the philosophy and the people involved and started working with them and everything, I go to Harry and I go, Harry, man, this libertarian thing's got going on. And he's like, no, and he's an older guy. I mean, by then, you know, he was in his 80s then anyway, late 70s at least. And he goes, Ernie, yeah, I know libertarian. I don't have nothing to do with libertarian. Don't talk to me about libertarian. Okay. Yeah, I respect this. What are you going to do? I'll change. You know, an old guy says no. That means no. So I didn't bother with it until I was researching some articles I was done before, and I saw his name overlapped with some really prominent libertarians back in the 50s on this Girl Scout UN thing. They were successful and have a lot of stuff taken out of the Girl Scout manuals, exposing what was being done on globalization of blah, blah, blah. So I'm going, oh, so you do know these guys? Oh, absolutely. This was the controversy. In the late 50s, when they were doing this Freedom College thing, the CEOs and the managers and people that were powerful, you know, a lot of times they counted on them to be in some of the money that would support their conservative anti-communist efforts. They would go to this Freedom College thing in Colorado, and they would come out anti-state. Well, Harry was like, look, we want you to be anti their state, but not anti our state. See, it was an us versus them thing. It wasn't a philosophical argument with them. It was like, you know, we want to have the ring of power, you know, as long as we're behind the lever of power. So this same argument's been going on for freaking ever, okay? Even before America. Heck, that's why America was founded. You know, then the bad guys came with the Constitution and enslaved everybody again. I mean, you know, it's just a revolution cycle thing. So Harry understood more than I thought he did this power of the libertarian ideal, that people that they counted on financially, people that they counted on as being leaders in the movement, people that they counted on to forward the message, run for office, all this kind of stuff, as they graduated, it's kind of like, you know, Rush Limbaugh. You listen to him in the early 90s with half his brain tied behind his back to make it fair. You know, fair to who? You know, untie your other half, come debate a libertarian, whip your butt anyway. You know, heck, you'd be libertarian, you untied the other half. So this was kind of what was going on in the late 50s. People that were becoming aware of what the United States had become. Because when Ayn Rand wrote Atlas Shrugged, her whole point was is that, you know, it's ominous parallels. That we have everything that made the Soviet Union and the fascist Germany and all this other stuff, those roots were well ingrained already in America. This authority to, you know, they confiscated all the gold in the 30s. They, you know, created the Federal Reserve in the teens. They did, on and on and on. All this, she saw what was happening. Go, look, you want to see the roots of what created Stalin and Hitler and all this other stuff? Well, you got it. You know, hello. I mean, here it is. This is how you do it. So that's what Atlas Shrugged kind of started people on thinking. When they came out of this college, which was, I don't know, it was less than a month. I mean, it was at least a couple of weeks, I think. They'd come out and they go, okay, I get it. You know, I understand. I see it. Because where else were you getting it? All the stuff that they were doing, laws that were passed, people that were involved in creating this organization and that organization and how they got into the administration and they were in the government and the bureaucracies that were created and what money they were taking, on and on and on. You could see it coming. It was a goose step march to where we are right now. And Harry was upset because it pulled a lot of the power away from them being in charge. Then JFK wins from Ike. Well, come to find out, JFK was probably better than most, and he wanted to dismantle a bunch of this stuff, including the CIA, and even for a few months, they even went to coining money again and all kinds of stuff, and then you wake up dead. Okay. Well, as time goes on, you know, it's what, 30-something years later, you got this young, you know, go-get-em Ernest Hancock guy going, hey, man, what about this libertarian thing? Eh, I already know what I was doing, whatever. Then it's 9/11. All this other stuff happens. All the stuff that they said was going to happen happened. All of it. You know, it's 40 years later, and boom, here she comes. All of a sudden, Harry's not as averse anymore. Yeah, you know, maybe Ernie, yeah, you know, I mean, who else wants to do it? Who else are we going to give the Breakfast Club to? Who, what? You know, there are people that, well, we'd like to, I'm not doing it until you guys understand. It's going to go a totally different direction. I mean, there'll be a before and an after. And I'll tell you one thing that immediately went away. You know, this Pledge of Allegiance, you can do it all you want, but I ain't doing it. I already know better. I know the history. I know. I'm not playing. Those that don't know, I mean, the Pledge of Allegiance was done by Bellamy, which was a socialist back in the turn of the century, back at the end of the 1800s. Him and his cousin, I think, he was a preacher, too. It was like Jesus is socialist. Seriously. And the Pledge of Allegiance, it didn't have under God in it, and it had other stuff, whatever. They took and put it and ingrained it into the public school system. They wanted to, it used to be, you know, the Heil Hitler salute, where you put your hand out. Well, it was the same, except your palm was up, and you kind of, you know, I pledge allegiance to the flag, and you kind of have your hands at your side, and then you point your finger, your hand, or your palm up to the flag, like that. But it looked too much like a Nazi salute, so after World War II, it started going hand over heart. Well, then they added, you know, under God, you know, that's like, okay, as long as you do that, then it's okay. And it was all about this worship and getting the kids' minds into this worship or support or allegiance to the state. You can call it the Republic for which it stands, whatever. It's not to some other state or to the family or to something else. It's to the state. Every single day in school, you start off by a pledge of allegiance. Where do you think this mentality comes from? It comes from status. It comes from collectivist. It comes from whatever it is to put you on some plantation. So you fast forward to just a few years ago. Oh, it was probably less than 3 years ago, 2 years ago. There's a good Republican that, you know, well known as a libertarian, the elected official. In fact, he ran for governor as a libertarian in the 90s. And his name is Tom Rolfe. And he and his wife, very involved. He was elected county supervisor. He, until recently, was Mesa city councilman. And he said, I'm not doing the Pledge of Allegiance while we're at war, you know, and undeclared wars and all this kind of stuff. I'm not Pledge of Allegiance to a republic that does this. I'm not doing it. So, yeah, made big controversy. Oh, they bring out, what are they going to do? They bring out the Boy Scouts. Literally. They get the Boy Scouts to come up there and lead the Pledge of Allegiance at the meetings while he sits down. Yeah, I have the Boy Scouts up there. That's a good photo op. Well, a lot of us went, and we would sit down with them. We'd just sit down in the audience, and then we'd go out before and after the meetings, and we'd pass out trifolds that we had done on the history of the pledge. Go, okay, you want to play? Here, kids. Learn the real history of where this came from and who did it and why. All of a sudden, that kind of went away. They didn't want to play anymore. I go, you guys want to play? Let's rock. You know, the truth is very powerful. As we go from the 50s into the 60s and so on, and what happened in Vietnam, and it gets, you know, you have the Breakfast Club meeting every Saturday, lots of people. Then the fall of the Soviet Union happened. When the Soviet Union went away, all of a sudden, now what are they going to do? Because it was all anti-communism. I mean, the anti-communism, ooh, we win, now what? Well, then they started to look towards the communism in our own government. It finally freed them up to do that. It's about time. There was a gentleman that came in the mid-90s, and I can't remember his name, but he you know, he's one of the guys going around, you know, are you a watermelon? You know, are you green on the outside, red on the inside? Environmentalism, the new socialist flagship. I remember him saying this. And the one that bit of information that really, I mean, kind of threw me for a loop and surprised me is he goes, do you even know where Mikhail Gorbachev went after the fall of the Soviet Union? He started a thing called the Green Cross. And the offices were put at the Presidio. The Presidio used to be a naval base, you know, on the San Francisco Bay there. And the Presidio was, you know, it was a nice, you know, place, you know, got my golf course and all this kind of stuff. And they went, when they closed a lot of military bases, that was one that they closed. Well, it kind of went private, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of mercenary kind of offices. I mean, it's still military, you know, it's just kind of private military. So imagine the military industrial complex got their own little base. Well, one of the offices was rented to the Green Cross. So you have headquarters. The former Uber head SOB in charge of the Soviet Union moves to the Presidio, a former military base. I'm going, how bad does it have to get, man? So he's going, look, he started the Green Cross. If you Google the Green Cross right now, you just go in Green Cross Mikhail, and it'll come up. This is, you know, I'm not making this stuff up. So I go, all right, you know, let's go ahead and do that now. So you can go Green Cross Mikhail. Now, if you go ahead and do research on this, you'll find that Mikhail Gorbachev started this thing, and it was kind of like the, you know, it's Al Gore. You know, it's environmentalism. We're, you know, the planet's going to crap, and we got to and say, and, you know, it's all good. So the Green Cross is an environmental group with the United Nations now, because the United Nations has embraced him, and they are setting up all kinds of stuff. Now, of course, you got to remember in the early 90s, how do you have any kind of communication? Under what banner do you do the Eastern Bloc? I mean, all of a sudden, they're falling apart. You know, but you still want to have, you know, the leaders, you know, the parliamentary, whatever bodies that they're doing, some of the guys that got put into that. You still want to kind of keep communication. You want to keep it together. You want to have a common thread of doing, passing, save the children, something. Green Cross filled the bill. This was it. Environmentalism was the socialist new flagship. When this kind of stuff started happening, and these guys would give these presentations, and they would do the web of who was connected to who and so on, and then it always goes back to, you know, the elite central banking, De La, conspiratorial, John Birch Society kind of stuff. You know, these guys jumped on it. They're going, yep, go get them. Go get them. Yeah, bad guys. So I'm like, okay, you know, I see what's going on. What do you do about it? How do you fight that? What do you do? I mean, is there some curriculum you try and push into the school system? Well, what are you successful at getting in the curriculum? I don't know, our version. You know, I don't know, you put in some textbook, you get, I mean, you know, while they're worrying about all this other collective attack on this, the libertarians understood where the power was. It was going directly to young minds using the internet. We saw it coming in 94. And we go, here we go. Freedom's Phoenix was already formulated in our heads, 95, 96. When we come back, I'll tell you some of the powers, you know, what's happened since then, because you need to know this stuff. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, I'm going to be a blue-collar man. Oh, I'm in the unemployment line. I just, this is not new stuff. This has been going on and on and on. I just posted Green Cross International, Mikhail Gorbachev, founding president and member of the board. You go to the top of Freedom's Phoenix right now, there's the link right there. Click, there you go. I knew this, was it 15 years ago? Right after the fall of Soviet Union, boom, didn't miss a beat. Boom, Presidio. Now they got the offices in, I don't know, Switzerland somewhere or something. So I'm going, okay. And then they merge in with the United Nations and Al Gore, and they, which is Vice President of the United States of America. You know, Mikhail Gorbachev, you know, have what they do, premier or head Soviet, you know, buddy in charge, whatever. Now, here he comes. Him and Al Gore teamed up. Save planet. You know what happens when it gets cold, like it's been? You know, I flew into Phoenix from New Hampshire Monday night. As I come in, the Phoenix was green. I mean, it happens every, I don't know, 7 years or so. You just get a lot of rain and the mountains all turn. You know what's going to happen. You know, by June, it's going to be big-time brush fires. Yeah, that's just the way it is. You make a lot of foliage, and then it gets really desert dry, and, you know, here comes a fire. All it takes is one. So this is – we've got a lot of rain, and it's been a lot cooler this year. And I know it's been, you know, record snowstorms all over the planet. So I'm going, you know, what happens when it gets cold? Well, we knew it was coming because of the sunspot activity. We've been doing radio shows on this for years. I'm going, look, man, did it ever occur to anybody it might be the sun? That big giant thermonuclear, you know, blazing radiation on us, that might have some kind of impact on this because the sun has its own climate. Then it goes over. You know, sunspots like every 11 years or so, and they go through different cycles, and then it has different, you know, waves of energy that go and causes climate change on the planet. You know, so I'm just, you know, come on. Well, they use this. Now, think about it. What if you're somebody that keeps really good records? You're the Mayans, or you're the monarchy of Great Britain. You think through hundreds or even sometimes thousands of years, you have continuous rule of Lord knows who secret handshake people, that they know what's going to happen with it. They know it. I give you a good example. This is a good example to end on this hour. The movie Apocalypto by Mel Gibson was about the Aztecs and all of the, their conquering in Central America as they're going, you know, big tribes taking on little tribes and whatever. And how they maintained their power was through the priesthood, through their faith. They have all these astrological and astronomical devices and so on that out there, and the way they build stuff and the sun, moon, going. And imagine this. If you're a peasant out in the field and the sun rose and the sun set every day for, you know, 30 years of your short under 40-year lifespan or something, and then all of a sudden the priest, yeah, booga, 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 we're going to whatever, and we've got to sacrifice all these guys and everything because the sun's going away, and the sun goes away in an eclipse, and then you're like, booga, 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 and you make it come back and save you from the gods that took the sun away. Guess what? You the freaking man. Yes, and boss, what you want me be doing? May the sun go away, may it come back. Well, what if you know all these kind of cycles in nature and you take advantage of it?